Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of HR Leaders Live, the show where we discuss the future of work with today's most innovative and successful people leaders. On today's show, we're going to be talking about how to develop a data-savvy HR department. To help me answer this question, I have three amazing guests joining us today. First off, we have Gustavo Canton, who's the Global Vice President of People Analytics at Schneider Electric. We have Heather Whiteman, Global Vice President of People Strategy and Analytics at GE Digital. And last, certainly not least, Melissa Cantor, who's the Vice President of People Analytics and Insights at Lego. Hello, guys. How are you? Welcome.
Hello.
Great. How are you?
Thank you. Hello.
Good. I'm glad we made it all work and we got here and made it happen. And thank you to everyone who's already tuned in and listening. It's great to have everyone here with us. So let's kick off the conversation. We'll start with you. I'll pick on you, Gustavo. Straight away. When I reached out to you and I sent over this the details for the session in terms of how to develop a data savvy HR department, what was the first thing that came to mind?
The first kit, I think I have an anecdote from Talent Acquisition telling me, hey, Gustavo, if I knew that analytics was such a hot topic, that was like 3 years ago, I would have hired much more people with that profile. So I think that was the first thing that came to mind, is how much analytics have changed from being a function in organization to actually being seen as a mindset or a skill set that is required in many different areas, including HR.
Yes, I was so thrilled when you reached out, because at Lego, we've just kicked off a huge initiative within our own HR function to really improve data literacy across the board. And it's super fun, because Lego being Lego, we have Lego Batman as our mascot, that data is the new black. And we're really embarking on this great journey collectively within HR and more broadly across the organization to really learn how to work with data and understand what it means to be more of a data-driven organization.
I love the notion of a data savvy. I've been trying to push for this for so long. I'm an enthusiast on all things data. I think it's really important. I teach a course on it, with another program, and then have a great team. I just think that you can do so much with it. I think the businesses are really starting to come around to the power of it. And I really like the opportunity for HR to be able to see how strong they can be with the more that they know, the more they can do with the data. So huge advocate of it. And I think the more that we build a data savvy team, the more possibilities we'll even see. And really excited about how technology is almost making it easier these days too, which I think is great, because it's making it more accessible. And it's why I hope people are getting a little more excited about being able to be data savvy.
Yeah. What does that mean to you guys when you say data savvy, right? Or a data savvy culture in the team? What does that mean to you guys?
If I may, just to make it very simple, I think the ability to consume the data itself, like having looking at reports, information, graphs, having discussions about different findings at all different levels of the organization, I think by itself, that is a muscle that you have to develop, right? And you can see that organizations that have a really good environment that is very open, where there is that inclusiveness, where you can share at different levels what is happening with data in HR or outside HR, those are the companies who are thriving today. That's what I see.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think data savvy within the context of people analytics is really ensuring that all of the folks within HR and our people leaders across the business can understand and consume the outputs from people analytics departments. So often when we talk about building data savvy in HR, I think people get really scared and they think, oh God, we're gonna have to do statistics ourselves. We're gonna work through algorithms. And actually, no, you know, let my team, let the data geeks work on all that stuff. Data savvy for me is being able to look at information and be able to critique it and challenge it and have confidence in understanding what charts and graphs and information provides, not necessarily having the wherewithal to actually have to create and crunch all that muscle. So I agree completely. It's spot on. It's about being able to consume and understand the outputs.
I love that, Melissa. That's exactly where I'd say too. I think people think they all have to go out and learn how to, you know, run regressions and all these statistics. And don't get me wrong, somebody should know how that works. But being data savvy is about using the data, not necessarily always doing the analytics. And you're right, there's a bit of fear sometimes. And so it's just helping people get to understanding what it means. I think that was spot on, Melissa.
How have you guys gone about creating that understanding in your own departments then? Because obviously that is a journey. You mentioned yourself, Melissa, this new program that you just rolled out. Could you elaborate on where you started, you know, identified the problem and how you worked through to this new Batman mascot to where you are now. What did that journey look like? How did that conversation happen?
I mean, there was a great working team that's been spearheaded by some of my colleagues. What does it mean to improve data literacy for us? And quite frankly, it's really about starting at the basics, you know, understanding simple charts and graphs, understanding and interpreting, you know, basic HR measures, you know, whether it's headcount or key KPIs, you know, pick those five or six things that are really relevant for you. Make sure you can understand them well and make sure your HR colleagues can understand them really well to have discussions and be able to challenge each other by it. And then slowly over time, build up your acumen so you can start with a chart and graph and then think, okay, how does this fit into a storyline? And most importantly, be able to have the wherewithal to link it back to the business. What exactly is this one measure that oftentimes we see in isolation? What does it tell us? How does it fit into the bigger picture? What levers is it identifying us for us to try to move within the organization? So I think for me, it's very broad about understanding that that is just one input into developing a business strategy or developing a business story, and to make sure that you understand that one input, but you put it in the context of the broader organization and the broader business need.
Yeah, I'll tell you one of the things we do. So we're a small and mighty team. It's myself and then one other member of the team, Misael Serpas, and he's amazing, a data scientist. But I think where some of his power, while he's great from an analytical perspective, one of the things that he's been doing is building very simple dashboards. So he just put out this dashboard that is, you know, it's that thing around, it's actually harder to do something simple. He took the most complex set of data around what does it mean when skills shift from hiring, from exits, from transfers within the org, from development. I mean, all these concepts, and somehow managed to get it into about a 6-box dashboard that anyone could understand. I think that's when you start being able to have real power, is when you can take really smart data people who know how to simplify it and simplify it down into a way that others can use it. I see that disconnect happen a lot, where it's almost too scientific at first that you can't get it to the audience. So one thing that we've done is, you know, focus on simplifying it, focus on visualization, focus on sharing in really simple ways. That I think has been more successful in my personal experience than say trainings to all the HRMs or, you know, show and tells. We've actually found that providing the info in a simple, easy to digest has been one of our best ways to get it out there and has been really impressive.
Yeah, I agree completely. And it's a brilliant skill to build up in your department, the ability to visualize and present complex data really simply. And it's not easy to do, actually. And if you have that skill set, power on, that's brilliant.
Yeah. Something that I will add is that sometimes, and I will speak about myself, the way I think, I cannot sometimes relate exactly or communicate in the language of the HR practitioner. So something that I try to do is I try to partner with somebody in HR, like an HRVP. And funny enough, we have really good HRVPs in terms of visualizing information. So we gave them kind of like, here is the model, here is what we're supposed to do. And I see a big dramatic difference between how effective they are at communicating to their own networks versus what sometimes our team can do. Because we can simplify things and communicate it, I think, in a succinct way. But, you know, it's like having a different language, right? Sometimes the HRVP language is more effective than the analytics HRVP interaction. So that's another way to at least to evangelize analytics within the organization.
That's true. And sometimes it's even, you know, within the analytics team and HRVP, and then you loop in finance and other functions. And a lot of times we talk lots of different languages, and aligning the vocabulary and lexicons is super important.
So how do you guys measure the current state of the expertise that exists in the team? Is there any way of doing that in terms of seeing what level it already operates at?
I think there's different maturity models you can try to peg yourself against. If you're doing, you know, is it basic HRMI? Have you moved and are you producing dashboards? And then are you producing interactive dashboards? And then if you move from dashboards to storyboards and doing some sort of predictive algorithms and things of that nature. So I think different organizations are in different places on that journey, and people have different skill sets that slot in and out through that journey. And I think it's not necessarily a journey where you have to get to the final destination. I think for your organization and the types of reporting analytics that are needed, you have to kind of pick which maturity model is best fit for you and where you want to position yourself on that spectrum.
From my perspective, completely agree with what you're saying. I think it is very necessary, and given the amount of demand that we're getting from digital solutions and analytics in HR, it is a need or a must to actually make the investment. Otherwise, you will have a lot of resistance in some cases from the HR community to adopt some of these solutions, or you're gonna have to spend a lot of time waiting for you to mature and get to a level. Like, to me, time is very important. So if I wanna mature my organization in 2 years, I need to make those investments upfront. Otherwise, time will go by and you might have to spend 5 to 10 years to actually see the, you know, the outcome expected from the leadership and the community as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of times people talk about the maturity in terms of just growing the skill sets in your team, but it's also growing all that supporting infrastructure, whether it's technology, databases, integrations that pull all the data together. That takes time and effort to mature as well, to get to that point where you can use all that data for running predictive algorithms, if that's where you want to go. And I think sometimes people understand the journey isn't just internal skills, it's building the technology infrastructure to support it and then tying all that into supporting a business need that you've identified.
Yeah. I'd go one step further on that infrastructure, because I completely agree with you on infrastructure, but it's not a technology infrastructure alone. I mean, we actually spent years on our HR infrastructure before we got to the place that we could do anything cool with our data. And I mean, that was the stuff that nobody likes spending time on. I mean, job structure, linkages between things, building taxonomies, really laying out the HR strategy infrastructure. Because if you don't start with the concept that you're gonna apply data-based outcomes, you're never gonna have the right strategy. You can plug in all these fancy tools that you want, but if they're not tied to your strategy, and then again, your infrastructure, and I mean both from a technology infrastructure, but just your processes, then it's kind of dead on arrival, excuse the bad term. But that is such a critical piece of it. And I've seen a lot of fancy tools show up and then just disappear 18 months later. And it's because they weren't integrated into the way that work was done. They weren't integrated into the systems and they weren't integrated into the outcomes. And I think people, skip over that infrastructure piece and jump straight to the analytics, and that's where a lot gets lost.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah. One of the questions from the audience, guys, said is, could you share, each of you, a practical example of something that you've implemented in your HR analytics strategy?
I'll give you a basic example that I think is very powerful, and then I'm going to give you something more advanced, right? A basic example is, we actually did a KPI glossary and we posted on our, basically on our internal site for Schneider Electric. And this is very important for a global company that is very complex like ourselves, because there are so many definitions in terms of KPIs that happen across the globe. So when you start doing global reporting, it becomes a big challenge to get consistency and efficiency. So this is something that is very, very simple, or seems to be simple, but it actually has a very profound effect in efficiency for the HR partners. Now, if we're talking about something more sophisticated, we recently created a dashboard, and basically we put a model in the background to actually forecast what is going to be headcount and some of the demographics of our workforce in the next 3 to 5 years. Now, the power of this solution is not in the forecast. It's actually in that the fact that it allows the user to change the inputs on hiring rate, on different inputs, and allow the leaders to understand if their ambition or their goals long-term match the reality and the trend that we are facing today. To me, that's very powerful, because it actually shows you that if you're actually trying to reach the goal in 3 years, perhaps what you're doing today at this rate is not gonna get you there. You need to adjust, right? So that's a few examples from my end.
One of the things that we did is we had a member of our team make a little video explaining some of the key measures that we have in place and some of the key reports that we have in place. And that was really helpful and a fun, innovative way to explain, you know, what might be moderately a dry topic sometimes. And I think that's a great way to engage with folks and help improve the broader data literacy across the organization. And I think one of the other things, and we've just kicked this off, to Heather's point earlier, is getting our foundation right and our data dictionary right.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. Two-thirds of employees have one foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
And we're going through a process this year to really understand the different elements of the data and how it flows through our systems and which aspects of those data that we can use in our analytics and reporting and make sense. So I think, you know, two practical examples is just putting in the hard work to get your underlying data model right. It is worth its weight in gold. And anything that you can come up with that's fun and exciting or slightly different to get people interested in listening and learning about analytics is all for it.
Yes, to throw out kind of a practical example, one thing that we do is looking at org health. So we'll actually spend a little bit of time and put together the analytics around our organization. So things around how, you know, teams are dispersed, whether they're, you know, wide or narrow organizations. And that's a nice thing that you can do by ratios. We look at attrition. We look at a lot around our skills and capabilities and the depth that we have in our organization. So those are some of the more practical things that our data analytics team, and to my earlier comment, we kind of just focus on what information do we think people are caring about and how do we present it in a way that's just really digestible and easy to understand. And so you like org health is the way that most people would think about what they really want to know. They don't come to you saying, I want to know data and analytics on people. They say, I want to know how our organization is doing. Are we healthy? Are we unhealthy? Where should I focus? And so using practical examples that focus on that area, I think is really powerful. And that's one of the things that we've done in addition to the more advanced, like I mentioned, dashboards earlier that we have. So that's kind of a practical example is you put in your own language too. And sometimes the more common approaches can be more practically useful when they're put into your company's language, your words, or into the focus areas of people you're trying to reach.
Fantastic. I've got another question from the audience. Thanks, guys, for your insights. Claire McClung asked, are you working with other analytics teams in different departments in the business, in other business areas?
I think one of the things that we have in Schneider that I think is very powerful is we have communities, and we have several communities, and it's very organic, right? So we have a community, for example, for BI and analytics. And in this community, we actually partner with, you know, global supply chain, the sales operations team, finance, you know, and so on. So what I like about this is that there are many projects or opportunities that we can work in our team that we can actually basically outsource some of the projects or some of the tasks to other talent outside of HR and vice versa. Because in the end, analytics, we are trying to solve for the business. We shouldn't be trying just to do things for our own function. So I think it's important to have that collaboration and that synergy across different functions. What about you, Melissa?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, one simple example is we obviously partner with our colleagues in finance to make sure we're fully aligned on all the headcount reporting we do, for example. And we partner with other bits throughout the organization as well to make sure that we're all fully aligned on what the data says and make sure we're all interpreting it and storyboarding it appropriately and consistently across the organization. And then in a more technical capacity, we're partnering with our enterprise technology group to figure out how best to incorporate our people data and our broader enterprise data lake so that we can do some more sophisticated reporting by pulling people data as well as information from other key functional areas, whether it's sales, supply chain, financials, commercials, et cetera. And we're just in the starting points of that, but it's really exciting to see that. I think for me, people analytics is absolutely brilliant, but the real power comes is when you can tie all the different data sets together across the enterprise. And that's a super exciting journey to embark on.
Like Gustavo, I'm part of an organization that has an opportunity to work across different areas within GE. So I'm very lucky that we have other, you know, colleagues who are working in the same area. In fact, we each business sort of has their own people analytics team, and then we can connect. We have regular calls. It's a a beautiful place to be, but I'll stop backdoor bragging about that because not every company is going to have that opportunity. That's, I think, pretty rare and pretty special. And those who have it, take advantage of it. Make friends in your organization. I swear they're there. You just might have to find them. But yeah, there's people in, you know, your more tech teams. You actually will find a lot of friends in business operations as well as in the finance teams. So if you're looking for a friend in your own organization, they find this stuff really interesting and you will have some really cool lunchtime conversations. So try to make some friends in your own business. And then second, you're kind of already doing it. Joining things like this, like I love the HR Leaders podcast, is a way for you to still have those relationships and learn from other people, even if you don't know them personally. So a little shout out to the team with HR Leaders is this is your team too. Like right here, the, you know, Gustavo and Chris and the whole HR team and Melissa and I are, you know, consider us part of your team to work on it too.
Fantastic. And I've also, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I noticed a lot of the people on LinkedIn I speak to, they recruit from within their own organization from most other departments. So there's so many times I'm like, how did you become the head of people analytics? Oh, I worked in finance and they actually moved me into this role in HR. And I see that there's so much talent already exists in your own organizations as well, in terms of building out your HR capability or people analytics capability in your teams, right? It's more, and that leads me on to the next question. What are some of the things that we need to look for when hiring for analytical capability? You know, what are some of the questions you ask? Because many of the people listening are probably just new into this and building their team out and interviewing candidates. What are some of the questions we need to ask? You know, what do we need to look for when hiring for this type of capability?
For me, in the end, for analytics, we're trying to tell a story, right? So I hire different roles with different skills that allows me to pull the story together. So one of the things that I try to get from the individual is, based on a specific use case, what is their interpretation and how will they take that use case and help HR partner or HR resource take action on it? Because I want to see not so much about the technical piece. I want to see how they interpret information and how they help others take action on the information. That's I think, how you unlock the value, right?
Absolutely. I think it depends how big your team is as well. You know, if you have a big team and you have the luxury of having different roles, you could have someone who's, you know, all over statistics. You could have someone who's all over visualization, someone who's all over storyboarding. And that's absolutely brilliant. But a lot of us don't have that luxury and we have smaller teams. So finding people who can really talk the techie talk as well as the business talk for me is absolutely critical. We can always find someone to help us if we need an IT or another function that might be able to do some of the more heavy lifting. And then, but being able to translate that output in a way that is, you know, consumable for our broader HR colleagues and our broader colleagues in the business. And for me, it's absolutely pivotal. It's having that person that can bridge the gap between the hard techie knowledge and the broader business knowledge.
I mean, I would say I look for kind of two things that are going to seem odd. One is straightforward passion. I will take someone without skills who has passion over someone's skills every day. And in fact, I've learned that a couple times over. You can have all the right technical skills, but if you're not truly passionate about people analytics, if you don't go, oh, I wonder why they do that. I wonder if we could change that. If they're not asking those kind of I wonder questions, it doesn't really matter if you can be, you know, amazing at your analytics, because you're never going to ask those probing questions. People analytics is too new to just pick someone who's got skills and say, here, go run this. Because unfortunately, we're in that stage where you still are wondering what you're analyzing and how to analyze it. And so you need someone with this passion, this curiosity. This isn't like a long-standing field where there are already right ways to analyze it. So passion trumps technical every day. And anyone who's passionate will take the time to learn the technical that's right for them. And then the second part, I think, goes to David's comment there on sort of the pitfalls. I like a scared, passionate person. So, you know, call it black hat or fear or whatever you want to call it. But I want someone who every day is a little afraid that they're doing the wrong thing. And not just from a pushing the envelope, but because they should be asking, is this appropriate? Is this right? I mean, this is people we're talking about. Like, are we being appropriate with how we use the data privacy qualification? Should we even be answering this question at all? Like, yes, everybody's wondering, you know, but is it appropriate? Is it right? Should we be messing around in this kind of data? So I like that passion, and I like that little bit of fear and questioning. Is this right? Should we do it? What could be the negative outcomes, so that you think about that before, you know, really rolling something out. So those are kind of my two big ones.
Fantastic, guys. And I love your point earlier, which you all kind of led on, is about telling that story, because we can have the best dashboards in the world and all of the insights, but you do need someone to be able to sort of bridge that gap, as you're saying. And I'm seeing that I was in this misconception that when I first started working with people analytics leaders like yourselves, that you'd be very technical focused. In most cases, that actually you've been chosen to head up your functions because you have that ability to tell that story. And in a language that the business can understand. And of course, you had a technical understanding to work, you know, between the two. But if you don't have that, I see many people fail very quickly. And also, they seem to be also working on areas that aren't of real value to the leadership team. So they're kind of working on everything as opposed to working on one specific area that's adding the most value and removing that pain point. Then they're going to be engaged if you do that.
I was going to say, I don't know how was Melissa's and Heather's journey, but I can tell you, if you talk to me 14 years ago, it would have been a very different conversation, because I was so focused on the SQL and the line of code and the forecasting confidence level that I couldn't try to convince somebody of using the model, you know? So I think in my case, it has been a lot of mentoring and guidance from people to help me kind of refine. But, you know, some people just got it, you know, by nature, right?
Early days, someone's like, Heather, you need to not explain every single variable and like the 17 steps. Just tell them what you found and move along. And I had to learn that myself, too.
I want to go back to David's question, because he asked, what are the pitfalls of predictive analytics? And so I want you guys to jump into that and let me know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, for me, it's all about really understanding how you're predicting. I have yet to see a predictive algorithm that you can accept as the truth. And I think everyone hears, oh, the algorithm said this, and it's accepted as the truth. I think for me, the biggest pitfall is people don't understand its limitations, and they don't understand the context within that algorithm. And for me, it's super important that you do. And quite frankly, a lot of the algorithms out there are really just colored water, you know, and it's the variables and footprints underneath what's coming out is so broad and so general that it almost invalidates the findings anyway. So for me, the pitfall is be sure you know the assumptions that go into your models, be sure you know the footprints, really understand the margin of errors associated with algorithms you're looking at, because most of them, they're huge. We're still in the infancy in people analytics, as Heather was saying. I'm a long way to go to mature in that space.
I was going to say exactly what you're saying, Melissa. I'll give you a quick analogy. Every time I talk to an HR partner about a forecasting model, the first thing I need to remind myself to say is that every time you forecast, you are in error. There is an error. If not, it's not a forecast. You have a crystal ball, which none of us have, right? And the second thing is that I don't want people to take the model and just apply it blindly. It's the same thing that when you go out, like I am in Paris right now, and the sky is gray, I can look at my cell phone and the weather might say, sunny day, perfect weather. I use my common sense plus the data on the app to bring my umbrella with me, because I know something could happen. So you need to understand that the forecasting model is a complement to your experience and your knowledge as a human being. It's not to replace it. And I think that's a good distinction.
Yeah, I agree completely. Well said.
Yeah, I got this comment. I stole it off of another people analytics buddy, Amit Mohindra. Maybe he stole it from someone else. But is that, don't call it predictive analytics. Call it perhaps analytics. Because it perhaps might happen. So I love that. And that's kind of the way that I like to think about it is, you know, you're never going to be able to get to a perfect. And to my comment earlier, we're talking about people here. It doesn't matter how good your database is, you are never going to have all of the variables to control. You're never going to be able to put in like the socioeconomic, economic factors and like how they're feeling that day and what's going on in their personal life. So we just need to understand that. And then back to my little bit of fear comment, get really worried about predictive analytics that impact people's lives and especially in how they were built. I think about if you train a model off of data that you have today, but you have a skewed workforce that's all one type of person, well, your model might predict out. If you're building some kind of attrition or promotion or something that has to do with pay, you could be negatively impacting someone just by default of the data that you used. And you might think you're being fair because you're using data, but you really need to be careful with how it's being used. And that's where, you know, I think we're getting better with some of our data privacy protection regulations, but that's one of the big pitfalls of predictive analytics for me, is I'm scared that people will use it. And it may be built on biased assumptions, but because people don't understand it, they may not know how to Gustavo's point, use their common reasoning on top of it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you train algorithms, as you said, with data sets that you have from history, if you know from history you've been unconsciously biased or you haven't had the right population, you're just training the model to make all those mistakes again. And you have to consciously train it properly. And sometimes that's even feeding in sample data sets that you've consciously crafted to minimize those sorts of biases. But it's not easy. It's exciting though, it's super interesting to see where it's going. But I like your comment. You have to have a healthy fear and always keep ethics at the forefront of your mind.
Mm-hmm. So what would your advice be to companies that are just starting out on people analytics? Where should they start? Is there a particular area as a focus? You know, what would your advice be?
Think about those two or three key business questions that people are asking but are struggling answering, and see what it'll take to figure out how to answer them. Even if your first attempt at doing that is a lot of Excel spreadsheets, you'll be able to prove the value of answering those questions, and that will help you secure buy-in to get more sophisticated solutions in place.
Yeah. I think you always need to start from the business, like Melissa mentioned. That's, I think, the first point. And also for you, have some kind of strategy in, like, what do you think you need in your data platform? What analytics tools do you need? What do you need to listen to your employees to actually take feedback and actually create that feedback into your models or your analysis? And finally, what is the best way for the organization to consume all this knowledge? Because I'm sure we all start with a couple of spreadsheets, then we create some dashboards, then we have some BIs, and as things start getting more and more mature, it also starts getting more complex to consume. So we need to find an easy way for people to access information and connect the dots.
So, no, I mean, I agree with everything. And yeah, one of my questions was, I'm actually a huge proponent of start small and start without technology. I'm a huge fan of the vendors. I think there's great things out there. I will be a proponent of them, but not when you're starting, because you need strategy behind what you're doing. And if you do whatever the vendor tells you to do, you'll be matching to their skill sets as opposed to matching what your business needs and wants from you. And I think you'll actually, in the first starting points, get a lot further if you can find a singular question, problem, item, and just ask yourself, how can I answer this? How can I give them information that would help? You know, to Gustavo and Melissa's point, that'll probably just be Excel sheets. You know, that'll probably just be something very basic and simple. But you can start to figure out how your business is ready to consume the information. And then you can start to build a strategy around how you want to give people info at what level. And then once you get a feeling for that, then I think you can evaluate those vendors. So I don't think there's one right answer on how to evaluate them. I think it's having a tiny bit of exposure to, ooh, they really like this. They seem to digest. This works with my culture. Okay, now how do these shiny tools fit what I know about my culture, how mature my organization is, with how ready they are to consume? Because if you don't kind of try it out a little first, you might end up selecting a solution that's not going to be adopted and then might not do so well.
Jose Pinto asked a question. He said, if you could go back and rebuild your teams from scratch, what would you do differently in building your people analytics team?
I wouldn't change anything. So my current team is tiny. And I like to bring that up because people think you have to have a massive team with like a statistician here and a data visualization person there and a this and a that and that. You don't. So I'm coming from a very tiny team, myself, one other person. We've had a couple interns and some special project people here and there. But I like how we're set up. Yes, we're tiny, but we're all about passion. We're all about outcomes. We're all about continuous growth. So like the member of my team joined with G just some Excel skills, and you know, a great mental mindset, great passion. And in the last few years, I mean, he's built up Python and, you know, Tableau and dashboarding and live web stuff, but he didn't start with any of those skill sets. It was about what does our organization need? How do we get things automated? How do we get them faster? And learning as you go. So one thing that I would not change at all was this continual mindset of just always be better than we were yesterday. Always be continually growing. And that's something that I think we did right. So, you know, it's the reverse of your question there, Jose, but
it's a good answer though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm looking at it in the reverse way as well, because the way I hire for my team, I need people who are good in their roles, who likes continuous learning, and who fits the culture of the team. And part of that culture has to do with the passion for people analytics and having that interest on the field. I believe people analytics is the most important, I would say, skill set to learn right now within HR. Not just because I think about it, there is a lot of studies made of that, and I do think it's gonna have a profound effect in how it's gonna help us transform the organization. So as long as my team keeps learning and they have the passion to keep using analytics to help people, I think the team is gonna be going in the right direction.
I think for me, and I'm thinking through, you know, previous roles I've had, one of the lessons I wish I could have told my earlier self was to appreciate what you have. Don't underestimate the amount of knowledge and talent and hunger that's already there in your organization. They just need to be empowered to release it and unleash their potential. And I get very frustrated. So many times I hear people say, we're gonna bring in consulting firm to do this. We're gonna bring in some contractors to up our game here. And actually, if you take a step back, you probably have a lot of that good knowledge already there. The people just need to feel empowered to be able to unleash it. And for me, that's really, really important. Don't underestimate the capabilities you currently have and how hungry people are to learn new capabilities.
You know, I will add one item that isn't about building my team, but it's about probably my biggest regret in my whole career. I was so into the analytics, kind of to Gustavo's point earlier. I was the one who would explain them all the way. Like, I wanted you to know by R square. But I had this point at one point in my career where I had this amazing attrition model. I mean, it was gorgeous, like 99.85, I round up, accurate at the end of the year. If one more person had quit, I would have been like on the nose. And I was so proud of myself. And then I looked back after a while and I'm kind of embarrassed and a little ashamed because all I did was watch it all year. All I did was say, look how great I am. Look how good I predicted this. And I'm embarrassed looking back because I had a great model and I did nothing. I didn't really put all of my effort into knowledge transfer to move those skills over. I didn't do a lot with the talent acquisition team. I didn't really, I mean, yes, I told people, yes, I shared it. They weren't equipped and ready to act on it, and I didn't do anything about it. And so when I look back, I'm quite frankly, it's my guilt moment. Like, that's what I would say. If there was one thing I could do differently, I would have that mindset towards why am I doing this and what's the outcome? The outcome isn't to be right. The outcome is to do something about it. In fact, if you're worth your salt in predictive analytics, for example, you should be being wrong because you should do something about it before it happens. And so that's one thing. If I could do something different, that would be it.
I love it, guys. I'm interested to know what the relationship looks like between you and your HR director or your CHRO. What does that relationship look like? And how do you make sure that you're always delivering value and that you're aligned?
So I can provide updates. I like to show him kind of what is the output or the product that he can see, right? Because sometimes when you talk about this stuff, it's hard sometimes to connect the dots and people learn differently. I think he's a very visual person. And he likes to see and touch the product, right? So I think it's important for me to help with that. More recently, I'm about to release kind of our new portal because I want him to see how all the pieces are starting to connect together, right? Because we talk about it in many different meetings, but I think once he starts seeing everything, how it relates to each other, it makes sense. But I definitely think for this role to be successful, you definitely need to have a lot of CHRO buy-in, because once we start trying to make recommendations to the business or the other entities, it can definitely help us drive, the compliance and the progress that is required for this to transform HR.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I work for our chief people officer, who's a huge champion of people analytics and data. So we have regular catch-ups, and I'm eternally grateful for his support.
Is that one of the reasons why you joined as well, Melissa?
It is, yeah.
I know, because I know you recently joined, right?
I joined in October. I'm 6 months in role now.
And was that one of the key reasons behind that, meeting the chief people officer and understanding that they're really passionate about this?
It was. I think for me, for joining LEGO, obviously LEGO is LEGO. It's brilliant anyway. But what attracted me most about this particular role was the fact that my boss, our chief people officer, is really at the forefront of technology. He's really a champion, not just of this agenda, but I also look after the refresh of our HR technology kits as well, and our digital journey, which is super, super exciting. And I can talk about it all day, so I'll be quiet. But yeah, for me, it was one of the key drivers for moving to LEGO.
One of the questions that are coming in, guys, is talking about, I know we've even got into the meat of it, but people are talking about what's next for people on LEGO. That seems to be one of the questions that keeps coming up. I feel like we're already only just get starting, really. But if someone asks you guys, what's next in people analytics, what would be your response to that?
To me, what is next is that I feel that people analytics is starting as a function. In many cases, is mainly focused on HR. I chose to call the name people analytics because I know what we're trying to do ties across the business. And I think in a couple of years, we will not be talking too much about people analytics. We're going to be talking about the corporate strategy analytics and how analytics can actually help drive the corporate strategy. So that might be my interpretation of how sequence of events, but I think for now, people analytics will continue to rise, will continue to evolve, but at some point in the future, you will see much more alignment with the corporate strategy.
Yeah, I agree. I think over the next few years, it would be great to see that this will sound awful, but all the noise around people analytics quietly goes away because it's so embedded in part of the normal way of doing things within HR and the business that it's to a certain extent take it for granted that of course you're going to be able to have a retention algorithm. Of course you're going to be able to understand these sorts of things. Of course we're going to be able to match candidate CVs or whatever it is you're looking to do. Now it's new and exciting and edgy. I would love for it to be so embedded that it's kind of business as usual and it's not new and exciting and edgy anymore.
I agree.
Fantastic. We have a question from Enrique Rodriguez. He asks, how do you guys handle the best balance between data volume and relevancy and required compliance while managing people privacy?
It's hard.
Oscar is like after my heart. He's already probably figured out how much I care about data privacy. I'm a huge fan of balancing with, especially on unique types of data, is voluntary. The notion of voluntary is very powerful. Now, it means there has to be a value proposition for why someone would be okay with you using their data. So a lot of times that means you need to think about the employee experience. It is, and I always go back to this comment, don't be creepy. It is a little creepy for you to ask for data on people for no reason that you're ever going to tell them why you want the data. Like, that creeps me out. If you're like, hey, can I know everything about you? I'd be like, why? What do you want to do with it? So that notion of voluntary and them getting something back out of it is one way that I think you can deal with the data and getting it there. And then when it comes to volume, I mean, that's where I do think technology does come into play and is important. I mean, let's be honest, at some point, managing that kind of stuff in Excel sheet just ain't going to work for you. And that's a great problem to have. So when you get there, congratulations, it'll suck, but it'll be one of your like greatest moments of when you're breaking over. And that's when you do need to leverage technology and you need to get into some of the more data management, data manipulation aspects rather than just the analytics.
Apart from that, guys, I think that's all we have time for today, because I think otherwise we'll be here a while asking even more and more questions. I appreciate you guys taking the time out to join us and to share your insights and perspective. I really appreciate it. And thank you to everyone listening for all of your questions. We tried to get through as many as we could. And apart from that, I wish you all the best. Have a great weekend, guys. And I'll see you all the same time next week, same place. See you later, guys.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, Melissa. Bye, Chris.